Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. And I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Matt Simmons, staff attorney here at EPIC. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tom.
And we're also joined by J.P. O'Brien, climate scientist and activist out of Mendocino County. Hey, J.P.
Hey, Tom.
And we're joined by Alder as well. Alder is a forest defender who is helping to save the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. Hey, Alder.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
All right. So today we are going to be talking about the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. If you're in Mendocino County, you are undoubtedly familiar with the Jackson. If you're from Humboldt, you might not know of its existence. So let's talk about what the heck the Jackson is. JP, do you want to talk to me a little bit about the Jackson? You actually live right at the border of the Jackson, surrounded on, I think, three sides your property is by the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. So you are intimately familiar with it. What is this creature, this state forest?
Yeah, so historically, this was Coast Yuki and Northern Pomo territory. And just to kind of give a larger perspective, in the 1860s, Western imperialism forced them off their lands, and that kind of began this era of resource extraction here. What Jackson is, this chunk of land, this tract of land, was owned by Casper Logging Company from 1860 on to about 1947, where they logged the majority of this land. In 1947, the state of California used taxpayer money to buy it from Casper Logging Company, so it is a public trust. And then in 1949, they declared it Jackson State Forest with a mandate to demonstrate sustainable commercial logging practices, whatever that means.
By sustainable, I think that we're talking here about a sustained yield of timber, not necessarily sustainable in the way that I might use it, which is, going to be able to sustain life here on this planet into the future.
Right. Yeah. Right now it's, the term that they're using is sustained maximum production, which is, a very capitalistic viewpoint of our forests, right? Get as much from them as is possible. And so ultimately, the state began logging here in 1949 and basically has continued ever since. More broadly, Jackson, it's a 50,000 acre chunk of land, and it is mostly redwood, interspersed with other conifers. It's a very diverse forest, oaks, lots of fungi. It's a really beautiful place, and so I would encourage everyone to come down and go camping and explore it, because it is a public forest, and everyone here has a right to be in it.
All right, Matt, I want to turn it over to you to talk about the legal structure under which this is managed. JP said that it is to be managed for industrial timber production and maximum sustained yield of timber coming off of these lands. What is the kind of legal framework? How is it governed? And what sort of protections are in place to ensure that things like wildlife and clean water are protected, or are they protected?
Yeah. So like JP was saying, Jackson is a state forest, which is actually a pretty unique land designation in California. Most of our forests are either private timberlands or federally managed. And so the law that governs Jackson was written in 1949. And, as a lawyer, laws that were written in 1949 tended to be sort of brief and vague in a way that they aren't as much anymore. And so I've read through the entire, section of the Public Resources Code that governs Jackson. And it basically says, there will be state forests and you should manage them for sustained using the, that we just talked about, that sustained meaning lots of timber coming out regularly timber production. And, you know, they weren't thinking about environmental protection at all in 1947. I mean, they were really just thinking about their bottom line and the fact that if you clear cut the entire forest, you wouldn't have any trees to cut down in the future, and that would be a problem. And so besides that, you know, all of our other environmental laws that have been passed since the creation of Jackson do apply. It's not like they get to do whatever they want there. They still have to follow CEQA. They still have to follow the forest practice rules. But, you know, we've talked on this podcast before about the problems with those laws and sort of the holes in what they protect and what they do and what they can and can't accomplish.
All right. So it's managed by the state of California. It's publicly owned, but it's managed by the state of California and managed by CAL FIRE, that agency that you're probably familiar with because of firefighting for timber production. So this is the state in kind of a weird place here where it is acting as if it is an industrial timber producer. It is acting as if it is a Green Diamond or a Humboldt Redwood Company. So a pretty interesting sort of legal structure for this. JP, as I mentioned at the start of the show, you are a climate scientist. You have a PhD, and you have been thinking really deeply about how forest management impacts our climate. So what's the problem with logging for maximum sustained timber production in a redwood forest? Why is this kind of a missed priority for the state?
Well, one of the main kind of points here is that, you know, redwood forests hold more carbon than any other forest type on the planet. So they have a tremendous ability to pull carbon out of the atmosphere and store it in above ground biomass, the trees and the plant matter, and also in the soil matter, right? If you walk through a redwood forest, you're no doubt familiar with, you know, these dense, cushy layers that are predominantly carbon. About 50% of the carbon stock in our forest is held in the soils, with about the other 50% in the above ground biomass. When you log these forests, it represents a loss of carbon that the forest can actually hold, and a future loss for the trees that were there to sequester even more carbon. And so obviously the defining issue of our time here is climate change and the excess amounts of carbon in our atmosphere. We really need to be maximizing the amount of carbon stored in our terrestrial sinks at this point. And that really kind of points towards reduced logging, because logging ultimately represents a net transfer of carbon from our forest to the atmosphere. And a forest like Jackson, which is exceedingly young, has a huge potential to absorb a lot of carbon, because most of that carbon was removed by past logging, right? So there's a huge future potential to kind of reabsorb that past lost carbon and not continue this cycle of emitting it and keeping the forest young. And so there's a lot of potential there. And I think probably I'll leave it at that for the time being. Matt, did I miss anything?
Cut you off on the carbon front, JP. You're the climate scientist.
Well, I will challenge you with what CAL FIRE says in response. So CAL FIRE says that the thing that is best for our planet, best for carbon sequestration, is to take these trees and cut them down when they are starting to cut them down and turn them into long-lived forest products, to put them into 2x4s, and that things like 2x4s are a good long-term stable way of sequestering carbon. And then they can put in young, aggressively growing trees and suck back up even more carbon. So what's wrong with this argument that CAL FIRE and the timber industry puts forward?
Two things. First is that only about, you know, at the end of this whole kind of, you know, this carbon life cycle, this cradle to grave life cycle, i.e. the tree to a actually long lived wood product, which, you know, long lived means, you know, 50 to 70 years, which is in the larger picture of a redwood life cycle, you know, only about 80%, 80 to 85% of that carbon actually is emitted to the atmosphere, and only about 15% actually makes it into this long-lived wood product. So these are losses like, well, when you cut down the tree, there's a, it generates a ton of slash, right? This is usually burned or left on the forest floor. Given that it's small, it decomposes rapidly and ends up in the atmosphere. There's mill residues and losses to carbon there. So ultimately, by the time you get to a 2x4 or a desk or something that will actually live for a long period of time, that only represents about 15% of the carbon, and the rest of that is emitted to the atmosphere on a relatively short time scale. Second, you know, implicit in that is this assumption that our forests will reabsorb this carbon. Under almost all climates, future climate scenarios, our forests in California are expected to hold less carbon, i.e. they become shorter, sparser, with a greater predominance of oaks and things like that. The redwood region is predicted to contract. And so all said and done, this assumption that these forests will reabsorb this carbon and keep growing vigorously like they have in the past is really ill-founded.
All right. Alder, I want to bring you into the conversation because you are watchdogging CAL FIRE and their agents as they are trying to log our public lands. So tell us about some of the timber harvest plans that are currently active.
Yeah, I've been doing more of the boots on the ground stuff and getting a lot of my information from you guys, actually, and then verifying it. So it's been a wild ride for me, but on the ground, the Casper 500 seems to be the timber harvest plan that gets the most attention. And there's just a lot of really big trees, and it's an area that gets used by the public a whole lot, a lot of trails through there, and wild roads that they have proposed that are just going to knock down these giant 200 plus year old trees. Meanwhile, there's a perfectly good alternative to that road that's on flatter ground and less erosion issues and not going through wet areas and not going through giant trees. But CAL FIRE has decided that it's okay instead to go on steep ground, erosion areas, wetlands, through some large trees in order to do the same thing. And then there's also like the Soda Gulch THP, where they have 113 acres, I believe, of hack and squirt, which is actually illegal here in Mendocino County. So they want to hack and squirt about 113 acres of hardwood species, oaks and madrones.
So hack and squirt, for folks who may not be familiar, is the practice of deliberately killing hardwoods using herbicide. So what they'll do is they'll hack into the tree with a hatchet or an axe and then squirt a mazapyr or some other herbicide into that cut. And this is to deliberately kill the hardwood trees because they want more of these, to use the industry language, thrifty coniferous trees in their place because those are the ones that have commercial value. Although, you know, JP mentioned that these were Yuki and Pomo lands originally, and many areas of the forest seem as if they were deliberately cultivated for production of hardwood trees, because these were the food system for the Yuki and Pomo people. So it is offensive to the Pomo people, and we are going to have a future show highlighting specifically the Pomo perspective with Chairman Michael Hunter of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians, who has been a fierce advocate for forest protection. So we have a lot of THPs that CAL FIRE is trying to log on the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. We have Casper 500, which is on the far west side of the forest outside of the town of Casper, which is in between Fort Bragg and Mendocino for folks who are trying to visualize Mendocino County on a map. And then we have Soda Gulch, which is close to Willits. And in between all those areas are historic or other ongoing THPs that CAL FIRE is trying to log in this forest. Let's talk about how folks on the ground are protecting these forests. So Alder, I understand that forest defenders have declared a people's moratorium on logging. Can you tell us about what that means and how folks are defending their public lands against CAL FIRE's mismanagement?
Yeah, so the public moratorium on logging kind of came about because we've been pushing for politicians to give us a moratorium on logging so that everyone can come together and come up with a decision on how the forest should be managed. But that hasn't resulted in any action. So the people, the public, have been going out and stopping these timber activities from happening. And that ranges from anything from setting up a road blockade outside of logging gates and not allowing anyone to come in, all the way to a tree sit high up in the trees, which prevents them from cutting anywhere around it, or even walking up to the timber fallers and asking them to stop cutting. And that last one has actually resulted in the most... It's been the most efficient because, you know, a tree sit is only in one spot, a road blockade. They often have 3, 4, 5 different ways into these THPs. So they'll just pull up and drive around to another gate. But a mobile group of people going around the THP and finding them and asking them to stop has been pretty effective, unless they decide that they want to continue falling trees with protesters present, which is becoming more and more prominent, especially in the Soda Gulch CHP, where the timber workers have been quite, they've been angry, which, you know, we can understand, but they've been pretty violent and pretty nasty out there.
So I'm glad that you brought this up because it seems as if there are heightened tensions in the forest right now. We have the loggers trying to get out the cut, and we have forest defenders who, I should also hasten to mention, only employ nonviolent tactics. They use their presence and their bodies as protection for these trees. So while they are on the ground, and that might be in technical violation of the law, this follows in a long line of American civil disobedience. Which traces its roots from Emerson and Thoreau all the way through the civil rights movement to today. So, so there are escalating tensions. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the threats that forest defenders have experienced, both from loggers and from these purported safety officers that have been hired, the kind of rent-a-cops that have been hired by the timber companies? And then we can get into kind of CAL FIRE's lack of leadership here and how this vacuum is putting lives at risk. So tell us about the threats that you and others have experienced.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first incident that kind of happened, it was actually me that was in the forest, and I had contacted or gotten close to a tree faller, and we wait until they fall the tree so we know that we're not going to get hit by the tree, and then walk up to them wearing bright colors, making lots of noise. We make eye contact, I ask him to stop, and then he, without even breaking a stride really, he says, don't worry, I can kill them without falling them, and then continues to walk around the forest with me present, following him. He knew I was there the entire time. And started cutting notch cuts into the trees. The first cut needed to fall the tree. It goes about halfway through. He did that to about 10, maybe 12 trees while I was following him around. which, you know, creates dangerous situations. The tree might not be falling right now, but if heavy winds come up, then they could certainly fall without much warning. Shortly after that, another tree faller, assaulted me, and I'm not going to go into all the details on it, but it was a wild situation.
So I'm going to toss it over to Matt, because Matt actually wrote a letter to State Senator McGuire, the director of CAL FIRE, Tom Porter, and Assemblymember Wood, raising the attention of incidents like this. And there was one that particularly scared me that Matt highlighted in his letter, which was, tell us about Yui and what she experienced.
Yeah. So Yui is another forest defender. She's Native Hawaiian. And on the day of this incident, she was parked sort of by a logging gate by herself. And a black truck pulls up to her, and two men get out, and they're wearing masks. And I know men wearing masks is a lot more common now than it used to be. But, you know, if you're by yourself and two men pull up next to you wearing masks, it's a bit scary. Oh, and I should mention that the truck was missing its license plates. So not only are these masked men, but they're masked men who are trying to hide their identity. They pull up. And one of the men who's wearing a Blue Lives Matter mask says to Yui, you know, you need to leave. You can't be here. He doesn't say, I'm with the police. You can't be here. He doesn't say, I'm with CAL FIRE. You can't be here. He just orders her to leave. And she says no. And, you know, they have a conversation about her leaving. She offers them a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. She's trying to calm them down. And eventually they get really frustrated. And the man reaches into his pocket and takes bullet casings out of his pocket and throws them at Yui's face and says, it's really dangerous out here in the forest. And, you know, I hope everyone listening to this understands how scary that would be and how terrifying that is, you know, just to have someone make that sort of threat to you. Go ahead.
Well, I also saw these photos, and I'm not really a gun nut personally, but I do have the ability to recognize what are higher caliber rounds. These aren't just little 22 bullets. These were high caliber rifle bullets that were thrown at her. Or shell casings, I should say, not the bullets themselves.
Go ahead, Elder.
Yeah, I could also add to that this was about 20 minutes after this Lear Asset Management, Paul Truitt, had come by and was documenting Yui at the gate and taking pictures of the protesters' vehicles and license plates. And, you know, this is somebody that CAL FIRE, under the guise of a safety officer. I don't know that much about being a safety officer, but, you know. That's not something.
Yeah, these are rent-a-cops. CAL FIRE's legal counsel, actually, based on a complaint to OSHA, told the private logging companies that they aren't to have their own private security force out there, that they need to rely on the state to enforce state closure laws. And I understand that the logging companies are frustrated because there is kind of a vacuum of leadership at CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE is not enforcing their rule against having these security officers present. CAL FIRE has kind of seeded the ground here, and their lack of leadership and their failure to intervene and have some sort of a pause given these escalating tensions only further inflames those people who are willing to use violence and the threat of violence to achieve their ends. So I'm really disappointed in the state of California. I'm disappointed in Governor Newsom. I'm disappointed in Resources Secretary Wade Crowfoot for their failure to intervene. And hopefully this will change. We understand that State Senator Mike McGuire and Assemblymember Jim Wood are meeting this week with CAL FIRE. And hopefully this will yield a pause in operations. CAL FIRE has already called a pause in operations on the Jackson previously when tensions rose earlier this summer. So we need to have this sort of a pause to protect human life. And that seemingly is the most important thing to me, is we need to ensure that everybody comes out of these woods safe and sound. So we're calling for a moratorium here at EPIC. I know that all of our advocates together, from the forest defenders to the Mendocino Trail stewards to the local CNPS, California Native Plant Society, local Sierra Club, everybody is asking right now for a moratorium on operations, active timber operations, and future THPs. Alder.
Yeah, well, you were saying, you know, we need a moratorium to preserve human life. I think a lot of the protesters that are on the ground would argue that the priority is going to be, you know, saving the trees. If you look at the mortality costs of carbon, the amount of carbon we're releasing in Jackson demonstration alone is going to cost far more lives than the people that are on the ground there.
Well, I have to say that the forest defenders are a lot braver than I am. I get to write letters and evaluate THPs. I don't put my neck on the line like you folks do. So all credit in the world to our forest defenders who are protecting our public lands, protecting these old growth redwoods from CAL FIRE's mismanagement. So thank you to you, Alder, and thank you to all the forest defenders out there. Your work is appreciated. Let's talk about a different vision for the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. And JP, I want to bring you back into this conversation here. How would you like to see the Jackson Demonstration State Forest managed? Or lack of management, if management is a euphemism for logging?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions there, and there's a lot of nuance. Ultimately, there needs to just be an open and honest discussion about where we're at and really where we need to go. The current management is not sufficient to protect the watersheds and to regenerate this forest, right? In most of these THPs, and almost all of them, it's the biggest, oldest second growth trees that are targeted, which are now more rare than old growth trees. And so that's something that really needs to be changed if we're to bring this forest back from being, perpetually young by continued logging to something that is older, has older forest structure for endangered species like spotted owls, and is more resilient to wildfire, which is an ever-growing problem in our state. These older trees, the older forest structure is far more resilient to fire. And that brings up another point that, most fire scientists, almost all of them, the vast majority of them, say we need more fire on our landscape, good fire, prescribed fire, to kind of mitigate some of the problems that we see with these high intensity fires that we've been having lately. Yet Jackson is still a place that has seen complete fire exclusion for over 100 years. There's been, one fire in Jackson in that time period in 2008, and it was, only about 1,000 acres, right? So, given that this is a continuous chunk of land, it is a prime place to kind of demonstrate prescribed burning, right? Because right now, the forest understory is so thick because of all the undergrowth that, historical logging has caused. So it would be a great place to demonstrate prescribed burning. And that really kind of helps cycle nutrients and makes the forest more resilient. We need to start thinking more about the future than, things like, timber production, which has been kind of the MO for the last 150 years here.
And Matt, I know that you have been tracking the state's 30 by 30 process, and we've done previous shows about this. So the idea being that we need to protect 30% of the state's lands by 2030 to ensure both biodiversity protection and climate protection. So the state is pursuing this 30 by 30 vision under an executive order passed by or issued by Governor Newsom. How does JP's vision of forest protection fit into this 30 by 30 movement?
Yeah. So like you said, Newsom issued this executive order, and, you know, 30% of California probably isn't enough actually to really stop the biodiversity crisis and the climate crisis, but it's a real goal. And I congratulate Newsom for issuing it. But then when you start looking at the numbers, we're going to have to start either purchasing or creating conservation easements on a lot of private property if we're going to meet that goal. And that's super expensive. And so this idea that you would prioritize protecting these expensive private lands before protecting a publicly owned state forest that we already purchased back in 1947 just makes no, you know, political sense. It makes no economic sense. This could be the place where Governor Newsom demonstrates how to take land that we've mismanaged for hundreds of years or 150 years and transform it into something for the future, right? Like Jackson is the perfect place to sort of say, look, we used to use this land mostly for timber, and it cost us in carbon, it cost us in biodiversity, it cost us in protecting our watersheds, and it conflicts with all these other uses, like, you know, the Pomo's use of the land and recreational uses of the land. But here we can transform this place and turn it into something new. And if you read through the 30 by 30 documents, this is exactly what they're talking about, right? They're talking about all these priorities that they want to shift towards. And I just, it doesn't make any sense that California would write up this beautiful document about how they want to change all their lands and then not do it with one of the largest pieces of, you know, state land that isn't currently protected.
This is the lowest hanging potential fruit,
right,
for when it comes to climate and carbon sequestration in the state. These are the highest potential forests in our country to save.
It already has beloved, you know, mountain biking and hiking trails. It's already, you know, there's good camping right nearby and a little bit inside of the forest. There's northern spotted owl habitat. There's marbled murrelet habitat in terms of preserving biodiversity. There's watersheds containing coho and other salmonids. It's so obvious that we should be protecting this forest. And it's just so sad that it's taking people risking their lives to try to make that change. I'm so frustrated right now with our state leadership.
Well, let's end the show on what people can do. So does anybody have a good suggestion here? If you're interested in helping to save the Jackson Demonstration State Forest, where to direct people or what folks can do?
Yeah, I would say check out our social media. The Mama Tree Network has a Facebook group, a Facebook page, and an Instagram account. And it's pretty much the same for all the platforms, Mama Tree Mendo. That's how you can find us there. And we post a lot of updates on what's happening in the forest, a lot of invites to different events like rallies. You know, you can come hang out outside of a logging gate in a safe area, hold a protest sign and let people know that you don't agree with what's happening.
And I also want to direct people to the coalition's website, savejackson.org. There you can find things like petitions and more information on existing THPs. This is a project of the Mendocino Trail Stewards, EPIC, Coyote Valley Band, everybody. This is our shared movement website. So check out savejackson.org. Any parting thoughts for us? That's okay to say no.
I would say come visit. It's a publicly owned resource. Everyone owns it. You can camp, you can hike, you can explore the biodiversity here, get to know the forest here, and then write your lawmakers and tell them that you don't want to see this forest be logged for industrial or commercial timber production.
Yeah, I want to really emphasize that. Write your lawmakers. Senator McGuire and Assemblymember Wood need to hear from us so that they become our active champions. Yeah, Alder.
Yeah, I would like to say on behalf of all of the forest defenders on the ground, we really appreciate all the work that you guys have been doing. You know, we can't hold off an entire timber industry and, you know, the Department of Forestry with all their timber interests, just with a few people on the ground. We've done a great job at slowing them down in some areas, but when it comes down to it, it's going to take a tremendous amount of showing scientific proof that what they're doing is wrong and getting legislative work done and all of that stuff. So, we've been saying that we've been kind of doing triage on the ground, but it's really going to take some professional surgeons to get the job done. Well, so we appreciate all the work you guys are doing.
It takes a village, and we appreciate you too. All right, so go to savejackson.org, check out the Mama Tree Mendo social media accounts, and we'll see you in the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. This has been another episode of the Eco News Report. Join us again next week on this time and channel for more news from the North Coast of California.